friends, welcome to Live Boldly with Sarah Shulton-Kranz, a survivor, thriver, adventurer, and believer in all things possible. My mission is to guide others to live their life boldly, regardless of circumstances. I believe we all have the power to overcome and lead joy-filled, happy lives. Recorded from the trail or in my office, I share inspiring stories from everyday people because we all deserve to be heard. You will also hear from handpicked professionals ready to guide you beside me. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Live Boldly podcast. Today I have on Jess Ekstrom, and whoa, did this conversation go deep very quickly. We talked about everything from family dynamics to family scandal to spreading optimism throughout the world. Before I start talking about Jess, I want to share with you that I will be heading into the Grand Canyon in just a few days with 9 other women. I am leading them on a Grand Canyon retreat. We will be doing everything from transformation of self, forgiveness, nature healing, nature therapy. We are going to be scrambling up rocks and creeks and just having an absolute blast at the same time. So if this is something that you'd be interested in, please take a look on my website. We do have retreats over Christmas of this year and also in January of 2021. So Jess Ekstrom, she is the founder and CEO of Headbands of Hope, which to date has donated 500,000 headbands to children's hospitals in 22 countries around the world, including every children's hospital in the United States. She is the best-selling author of Chasing the Bright Side, and she has been featured in major media outlets such as The Today Show, Good Morning America, The View, Vanity Fair, 17 Magazine, Huffington Post, and Forbes. And Headbands of Hope has been supported by dozens of celebrities. Jess is also a professional speaker and the founder of Mic Drop Workshop, an online course with the mission of empowering more women to share their message as speakers. She currently is living in an Airstream. I am jealous, and that is actually where she recorded her podcast with me. It was really cool. Traveling America with her husband and their 70-pound poodle, Ollie. Otherwise, they call Raleigh, North Carolina, home. I really suggest that you grab yourself a journal, a pen, and as always, your favorite drink. Listen to this podcast. You are going to feel so inspired afterwards. And again, if you are interested in joining us on one of our Grand Canyon retreats, we do have Christmas of this year open. It's going to be a blast. And then January of 2021. Both are co-ed, male, female, and I am excited to guide all of you. Enjoy this podcast. Hi, everyone. I am so thrilled once again to have another amazing guest on my podcast, Jess Ekstrom. You were dropping in from this incredible space, which, by the way, if I wasn't a mom to three children and doing the things that I'm doing, I would be probably where you are right now. And I don't want to tell anybody because I want it to come from your mouth.
But got it.
Where are you? Like, where are you right now?
So I am in an Airstream trailer parked in Nashville. My husband and I have been traveling in an Airstream for about a year now, hopefully going to go on another year. But yeah, when we first Skyped in, you know, we're on video, it looks like I'm in this like tin spaceship. And it's funny, whenever I do podcasts, I have to check the weather before, because if it rains, it sounds like pennies dropping in a jar. And so I'm like, we're clear. I can do this podcast.
No, it loves something. Okay. Everybody knows how I kind of operate. And if it starts pouring rain, we're just going to continue to go because
good.
I've done episodes. Honey,
oh,
I have done
gosh.
Episodes.
I've been like that.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like to me, it's like nature sounds are the best, but like I've been on with Tim Story and I've talked about this with other people where all of a sudden, like my phone starts ringing, my kids come in and I'm just like, you know what? This is real life. So why would I filter that? So,
and I love, I think this, like everyone working, you know, from home now and stuff has really brought to light that we're all human. Like let's cheer on like the kids screaming in the background, the dog barking because the Amazon delivery guy's here. It's like, I don't know, for me, I feel like that's been a refreshing part of this. It's just like realizing, you know, even watching like the Jimmy Fallon or something in his home, it's all just normalizing what we're all doing. We're all just human.
It's also showing that we need to get certain things done pretty soon, like clipping the dog's nails, because every time that I'm doing the intro, I'm trying to like do the intro on my podcast, and all of a sudden you're like, click, 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 click. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Okay, I haven't found a groomer for my dog yet. And so he's literally like a mop. Like his hair is just, it's a mess. So there's definitely his grooming needs will come before mine for sure. My roots can handle it, but he can't.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping to get it done at the same time.
Yeah, for sure.
Mine are looking pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I want to talk, really dive into, you know, I was talking about with you right before we jumped on that I like to align my podcasts so that we also kind of build upon the one prior to. And we have had some amazing people on just before you, Brandon Farbstein, Darcy Loma, Tamara Jacoby. And one of the things that I really want to talk to you about is optimism is a strategy. And I freaking, that's one of the first things you said to me when we jumped on. I was like, freaking love it, because you know, sometimes people drop things into your brain and you don't realize that that's what you've been doing. And in that moment, literally when you said that, I was like, ding. Yep. Thank
that's
you.
What
that
it
was
is. Great.
So I want you to just really start from the beginning. Like, okay, so you're in an Airstream, you're in Nashville.
Yeah.
How did you, how? I mean, I've done 6-week road trips in a minivan with 4 kids and a sister-in-law. So I get some of that, but like living in an Airstream is the bomb, by the way. How?
Thank you.
How?
Well, it started, and it's funny how some things that seem really big start with just a bunch of small things that led to it. You know, it wasn't like this. It's funny, my husband and I joke, the way that we decided to go in an Airstream was we were literally at this restaurant. My parents had been living on the road for 5 years now, so I've been following in their footsteps. Yeah. But we were like, we could do that, and like, why not? And it was literally this one dinner, and we call it the coconut shrimp that changed our life. We were like, let's go in an Airstream. But before that, I started my company, Headbands of Hope, in college. And so I was seeing a lot of kids that were losing their hair to chemotherapy when I was interning at the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I saw them, they'd be offered, you know, wigs or hats when a lot of them wanted to wear headbands and no one was providing that. And so I had this like knee jerk reaction, which I think it was a great thing at that time that I didn't put a lot of thought into it because I was just kind of moving with purpose. I started Headbands of Hope, and for every headband sold, we donate one to a child with cancer. So really, taking a long leap across this, the answer to this question, I started this company. We donate headbands to hospitals all over the world and was traveling a lot for that, for speaking engagements, for events, and thought, why not just take this on the road with my husband and our 70-pound dog for a little bit and go from there. So that's what we've been doing.
That's awesome. So you've been doing this for how long, you said?
A little over a year now we've been living in this Airstream.
What has been the biggest struggle and what has been the biggest aha, amazing moment?
The biggest struggle has been being taken out of your community. You feel like, you know, I think I took for granted the proximity of familiar people and just, oh yeah, I'll get coffee with you, or let's go, you know, for a walk, and having people there, was so, I have a new appreciation for community, because now when you're constantly mobile, you know, you don't have any roots anywhere, which is a great part, but also a challenging part. And I would say the best part is to be able to be in different places, but sleep in your same bed every night. You know, when I was traveling, I think one of the exhausting parts was like, all right, now I'm at a, you know, this hotel, or I'm getting this rental car, and I'm constantly adjusting. Whereas when you're in an Airstream, like your outside is different, but your inside's always the same.
Okay, that your outside is always different, but your inside is the same. That's optimism right there.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Definitely. I actually never really thought about that until now, but yeah, you can change where you are, but like who you are, you know, is the important part. And that's like with the Airstream, it's like we always have that home, that familiarity, whether we're in Yosemite or parked behind a gas station. You know, it's both.
Well, when I work with my clients, because I don't really believe that it doesn't shift, you know, business, personal, every day, whatever it is. I believe that it's all run and aligned with your purpose, your values, the way that we want to actually show up in the world. And that is actually how when I'm working with my trauma clients, it's the same thing. Like your outward world can continuously shift, but it's about finding the centrifugal force of who you are. What is your passion? What is your purpose? Like, who are you as a woman? Who are you as a partner, as a mom, whatever it is, as a businesswoman, right? Like, everything comes from there. What are your values?
Yeah. My favorite analogy is that boiling water can soften a potato, but harden an egg. So it's not as much about the circumstance as it is about the subject. And we have so many experiences that we can't control around us. You know, we can't control what the weather's like. We can't control, you know, if our flight gets in on time, but we can control the meaning we give to it and what we do next. And that's all internal. So I think that that's been like a lot of my journey with optimism is not really about the external skill sets that I had no idea what I was doing starting a business. I didn't really have a lot of the nuts and bolts, but I had this belief in better. And I think when you really truly believe that what you're doing is meaningful, then that becomes the grit. You know, that becomes the tenacity that you need to march forward. So when we talk a lot about like grit and hustle, you know, I don't think that those exist without optimism.
Yeah. What was the biggest struggle for you in terms of starting your business in this way? I used to do some work for Walk with Sally, which they provide mentors for kids with cancer. Mentors for the kids whose parents or family members have cancer. And so I used to do some work with them for actually quite a few years. And there's nothing like it. It's the coolest thing to know that you were helping in that way to create a better world. So what was your biggest strength or your biggest struggle with starting all of this?
So I would say, honestly, the biggest struggle in the beginning was a lot of like the feeling of, I have no idea what I'm doing. And any mistake was directly, I felt like connected to my self-worth. You know, I had a really ugly experience in the beginning of starting my company where I worked with a fraudulent manufacturer and I had a loan from my dad to, for my first round of headbands. Cause I'm like college student, you know, like living on ramen noodles. My dad was my first investor and that money was stolen. And that was like I felt like dipping my toes in the water. And so you immediately jump to the conclusion that like, I'm not qualified to be doing this. You know, this is me. And it took me a long time. And it's still something that I'm working on, that the resistance that we experience is a normal part of the process. And it's not a reflection of our worth. It's just a reflection of our growth. So I always thought that anytime I messed up or something didn't go my way, it was because I was not doing enough or like I'm not qualified or I'm not good enough. When now I realize it's really just an indicator that you're in the game, like that you're in it, you're doing it. And it took me a long time to wrap my head around that.
So I can't even express to you how much that this also relates with the journeys of that I also guide my clients through. 1,000%. Like it's so much of my clients show up to me and they're like, my self-worth sucks. Like do I really love myself? And when we've been betrayed, which is exactly what happened to you, you were horribly betrayed by somebody and taken advantage of. You automatically start to shift it into like, what did I do wrong? How did I land here? Why didn't I see this? Where were my red flags? Right. And so I'm so glad you brought that up and that you were so honest about that, because I can relate in a different kind of way. And the one thing that was most difficult for me in my journey, both my recovery journey from the betrayal of my husband, then also starting my company, was trust. like, who the hell do you trust? Can you really mm-hmm. trust yourself? Are you supposed to trust the outside world? Is it really as, I don't know why the word skanky keeps coming into my head, but like,
it yeah.
like it's yeah. just like, ooh, like it just, you know, can I really do this? Can I believe that there's that much good in the world?
That
this is going to blossom into something beautiful and create impact. So right. how did you regain the trust, not only of yourself, but of others, in order to take this to the next level?
I remember laying in bed that night, and it was like a few nights after all of this went down, when I realized that money wasn't coming back. Like, we went to court, we did all this stuff that just was like, opened my eyes to so much. And, you know, I'm closing my eyes, trying to go to sleep. And you know how you just like run through all of your biggest life's mistakes before you go mm-hmm. to bed. Like this'll lull me to sleep.
Yeah. Like it's like the Rolodex.
Yes, exactly. You're like, remember that time 8 years ago when I made that awkward comment at a party? It's like, that's me. So I'm thinking, you know, this isn't really about the embarrassment of failure. I feel like I could stomach being embarrassed about something. This is about a problem not being solved. You know, Headbands of Hope was started because I met kids that loved to wear headbands after losing their hair to chemotherapy. And so I like to think of, you know, the best businesses, it's like having an itch. You know, when there's a problem, you scratch it. And so it wasn't about the embarrassment of failure. It was about this itch not being scratched. Mm-hmm. And that was what like couldn't settle with me. And that's why optimism is so important, because you have to know what you're fighting for, you know, otherwise you'll never get the courage to start or like move past any hurdle. And so I got up and I went to my school that was offering like $300 to students who were starting businesses through some like entrepreneurship fund. And I bought two headbands from this supplier and North Dakota that I found on Etsy, and who felt really bad for me and let me buy like really low minimums. And I put those two headbands up on my website April 25th, 2012. And since then, we have over like 200 products on the site now, and we've sold over 600,000 headbands, and I never took outside money from anyone ever again. And so I think like a few things to answer your question. One, you have to believe in it. Like that is your resilience. That is your, that optimism that equals grit, but the grit can't be there without the optimism. And two, giving yourself permission of like, what can I do today? Like just for today, what if I got this $300 grant and bought a headband? I didn't think about completely jumping back on the horse of like, yeah, like press the gas, let's do it. It was like, one tiny step at a time eventually led to something really big. And I think when we worry about winning the Super Bowl, you know, we'll never just get the first down. So just tell yourself, like, just for today, I'm going to get the first down, or just for today, I'm going to look up a domain, you know, for my company. And so I think like giving myself permission to just do the small things to get there was eventually what led to the big thing that we've been able to do today,
which is being in an Airstream, living my dream.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm like, dang girl.
Yeah.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 28, about to be 29.
Oh my gosh. So my son is 28. You are a wise, wise woman.
Thank you.
Very wise woman. He is too. He was actually traveling the world until COVID hit, and then he had to come
back,
and now he is just itching to get back out there. So I think you have such an adventurous spirit along with wisdom
right.
and alignment with that. And you just know that, you just know, like, you know, like, you know, your passion and your purpose in creating a different world. It's just like magic happens.
Yeah. Well,
internally and externally.
And everyone has a different path. And like, I'm really fortunate to where, my family was involved. I talk about this in Chasing the Bright Side. My family was involved in a very public scandal when I was in high school. It was something that, like, you know, you look at the headlines and stuff of news and you're like, oh, that'll never happen to me, you know? And you kind of file it away of just like, never going to happen.
Right.
And that was what happened, was it was just this thing that like just shook everything I knew and just turned it upside down. And I think for that to happen, for me, at a time in my life where I felt like I was about to enter into college and figure out what I want to do, it gave me like this different perspective that I don't think I would have had. And maybe I wouldn't be thinking about things in so much depth had I not been, had I not seen that happen. And so sometimes things that we don't feel like have a silver lining, like you look back 11 years later and you realize they actually do. You know, I wouldn't be here.
So I actually wrote something else that I was going to continue with, but I really want to start there. Is that okay if we go to
Yeah,
that?
Absolutely.
You, because I know that for a lot of my listeners, scandal, isn't that an interesting word?
Yeah.
There, you know, like in my life, there, I guess you could call it scandal in a way. It's like scandalous. Mm-hmm. And I used that instead of, you know, I would say brushing it under the rug. I used it as a way to teach my kids to step into their leadership role and to allow that. It's kind of like how fear can sometimes be your driving force. Mm-hmm. If you switch it into more of an excitement mode. Can you tell me a little bit about the scandal and then what about it that actually drove you? Because that's huge. There are so many kids where we see it, like look at the Lori Loughlin case, right? Where mm-hmm. the kids, I don't know exactly what's going on with the kids. No judgment. I'm not them.
Right.
I don't know the details. It ultimately though could drive your children into this depth of despair and destruction. Mm-hmm. And yours didn't. Like yours is creating so much good. So can you tell me a little bit about the scandal? And then also what about it? What was the seed that was imprinted in you that then allowed you to become this freaking incredible 28-year-old woman who you are today?
Yeah. Thank you. So the scandal in a nutshell is my uncle is Bernie Madoff. So Bernie Madoff, if you're unfamiliar, is the biggest fraud of all time, stealing over $70 billion in a Ponzi scheme, which we were all my family had their money in him as well. You know, we were just as blindsided, you know, as everyone else, when that happened in December 2008. So it was something that was like, I remember coming down the stairs one morning and my parents had this routine where they would go to the gym before my sister and I went to school, and they'd be watching the news, making us breakfast, have the news on in the background, and the news wasn't on and the lights were off. And I was like, what is going on? And I knew that something was up, and it wasn't until I got home later that day that my parents told me not to turn on the news, that we would talk about it later because it was exams. And that was when I just saw like his face on every single channel. And it was, I mean, the first like outer body experience I've ever had in my life. And I mean, my grandparents, they lost their entire retirement. They started their own cab driving company, and they, you know, in their 80s are now doing 13 rides a day to the airport, became entrepreneurs. And so it was this one single experience, you know, that none of us knew was going to happen. None of us could control, but it wrote a completely different story for all of us. So I don't think that I would have started Headbands of Hope had I not been, had I not gone through that and seen and decided for myself that I wanted to do something that meant something, you know? I think for a while I felt like I needed to do something to almost even out the universe, as weird as that sounds, of like being associated with someone. And this is something that I'm very new with talking about. Like, I tried for so long to keep this as a separate thing of this isn't me, you know, mm-hmm. and, tried to clear my name from it. And it wasn't until I wrote Chasing the Bright Side where I was like, if I'm going to tell people how to live optimistically, I have to be honest with how I got there. And so the thing that I can really pull from it is, you know, that our experiences aren't what shapes us. It's our stories. And that's what we can actually control. I mean, my parents eventually sold their company, and they live in an RV, and they're now volunteer park rangers. Like, they would have never done that had it not been for that experience. So it's not immediate, like the silver linings, but it doesn't mean that they're not developing.
Yeah, that's so that right there, incredible. It does. It's not about them being immediate, the silver linings, but they are developing, and we are also a part of the development of them, right? Like, mm-hmm. like us being able to learn from them. And also, I love how you said this is almost like evening out the universe a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when I was thinking about when they asked me about my book, do you want to put both your names on it? Because I'm hyphenated and I've always been hyphenated. And I said, absolutely, because it's an attachment to my children, as well yeah. as the fact that it's an attachment to my past, which, mm-hmm. you know, would I still go through my past to get to where I am today? Actually, I would, because mm-hmm. look at who I've become, and I freaking love who I've become. And I'm sitting here having this story with you, which otherwise I wouldn't be able to do.
Right.
That. Like, yeah. how cool is that? Two people meet because of their past experiences that they didn't even ask for. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so I wouldn't be having this powerful conversation with you, and other people wouldn't be learning from it. Which is awesome. And I feel, first of all, I'm so sorry that you went through that. Number one.
Oh, thank you.
So sorry. I can still feel a little bit of the emotions that are coming up. And and thank you for sharing it, because it helps so many people to understand that those things that happen to us, they actually can become for us. Mm-hmm. And we didn't ask for them. And it's not about them. It's about what we do with it.
Yeah, totally. I think some of the emotion behind it has to do with being at a point in my life where, you know, I don't have kids yet, but I'm kind of understanding what it means to put money away, to save, to feel, you know, I have staff that I am paying and supporting their life. And at the time when this happened, I didn't really have that grasp on reality and money. And to think about what my parents did, you know, with two young kids, you know, and still trying to put them through college and to have the rug ripped out from under them. And that's what gets me emotional, is like, I feel like I am just realizing it sometimes for the first time, because being like 17 years old, you're like, oh, well, do I still get to go to prom? You know, you're just not really thinking about it. Right. And now thinking about how they just rallied and how their relationship as a couple, you know, grew stronger when it could be the opposite for a lot of people. And I just have a huge admiration from them. And a lot of the people who were victims of it, and my grandparents starting their cab driving company. I mean, like, and that's a funny thing too. My grandma, she always told me that she felt like she was born in the wrong decade, you know, that she wanted to be a businesswoman, and she had three kids by the time she was 22, and felt like she almost just kind of missed that chance because it was frowned upon. And now at 80 years old, she gets that, and she gets to exercise that business muscle and be an entrepreneur, and it brought a lot of life to her. So it's just interesting, and I just have a new appreciation for who my family is.
Yeah, it sounds to me like your family became a lot closer because of it.
Totally. If that doesn't bring you closer, it'll tear you apart. It's one or the other. Yeah.
It's one or the other. Totally. It either tears you apart or it brings you closer. And I do me a favor and hug your parents for me, honestly, because they did a hell of a job. I'm very, very serious. Like, as soon as we get off, go hug them, because they did one hell of a job in bringing you to this point, right? And like being honest and really open about it. And wow. Do you have siblings?
I do. So my sister, she picked up running, you know, as her mechanism for coping. And she has run like 5 ultra marathons, like 100-mile races. And she just is so impressive. Oh my God. She's a machine. And so she, I kind of took like the very like, let me dive into this issue approach. And she took the like, how can I develop completely new opposite skill sets? Like she's a wilderness, like that her job is like taking people in the woods and helping them survive. And so she's a total badass and we're completely opposite. And I love her for it. Yeah. She's awesome. I love her. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we all have our tools. Like we, and I think that that's one of the most important things too, coming out of anything, if it's a betrayal or family trauma, like anything like this, it's about finding your tools that work for you and no two tools are going to be the same. And just honoring the fact that, right? Like, awesome. Go run and do your thing. I did. That's interesting. Cause I did 5 ultras, but mine were 50 miles and people asking me, they were like, would you want to do 100? And like, I don't want to take that much time out of my life. Like, no.
Yeah. Totally.
In my 50 consisted of like, it was on Catalina Island and it was with friends and we did
That's awesome.
Oh, we didn't do it for time. We did it like, because they had champagne at the end and they had beer at mile 32 and it was,
no, that's my kind of race.
Oh, it was a blast. We had so much fun. We were all about just enjoying the journey. So, so that's we all, but my point is that we all take our own path to healing and yours was also in helping other people. It's interesting. And I'm just going to kind of throw this out to you. Here you were betrayed monetarily 2 times in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your girl has some money issues for sure. Yeah.
Ouch.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it. That's, first of all, you're really good at your job that you just strung those two together. Oh. But it took me 28 years to be like, man, maybe this is why I like flinched at a parking ticket, you know? But, I think that I have, sometimes like some scarcity issues of like, whatever I'm making or whatever I'm gaining, it's not going to be good enough because it's all going to be taken away. Right. And I work with my husband on that a lot, who was like, he grew up, not very wealthy, a very loving family, but then that family found wealth, made their own wealth later. Mm-hmm. And so he grew up in a very, like modest way that eventually they had money. And so he's like, any money that comes in, he's just grateful for it, but he doesn't need it. Whereas I feel like mine was the opposite, where we grew up, you know, wealthy and then it was taken away. And, so we have this kind of flip perspective around money and that he really helps me see things, but it's definitely something that I'm working on where, trying to enjoy what I have when I have it and not feel like I'm trying to constantly fill a barrel that has a leak in it, you know? Right.
Well, I think we all have that relationship with money. Like what provides safety for us? I know I've struggled with it myself because, you know, I came from a family, grew up in a small farming community. My dad, white collar worker, you know, worked for IBM. I never worried about it because they were really good at providing for us at what they had with what they had. And at the same time then, you know, I graduated, I'm a teacher and then I marry my husband and he's doing really well. And then all of a sudden over the course of 5 days, I'm like, my multi-million dollar home that I've been living in with my family is obliterated. Mm-hmm. And so in a different kind of way, I can imagine you coming down the stairs and this is where like, I'm going to start to tear up because I can imagine you as coming down the stairs as a 17-year-old and wondering what the hell's going on, dark room. Mm-hmm. And I came down my stairs, opened the door and didn't recognize the person who I opened it to. And so and my life was all of a sudden like obliterated. And I'm like, what's happening? Right. And everything, you know, it's just like, okay, I'm losing my home. I'm losing my foundation. And a lot of that is obviously because we need money to live. There's a relationship with that. Money in a different kind of way can create safety. However, that's not what we also want to always be holding on to, right? Mm-hmm. Like we also know that the safety comes from within, the trust, and that we can provide for ourselves and live an abundant life in many, many ways. And so that's why I got rid of my house. That's why I like sold my 4,200 square foot house because, and all my stuff, because I was like, I don't want attachment to this. I want to learn how to enjoy my life in a very simplistic way, which is interesting because most of my clients will come to me. The very first thing that they will say is, I want to live in a more simple way. Mm-hmm. I want to get back to simplicity. I want to get back to the things in life that provide me joy, but that I'm not materialistically attached to. So how do I do that? Right.
And so you live in an Airstream.
Live in an Airstream.
Just tell your clients that.
Go live in an Airstream. I mean, like literally that's why I'm also sitting here watching you like, dang, look at what you've come to. And that attachment to money is always a struggle for me too. Like, that's just that self-worth thing, right? Like that goes back to, you know, am I worthy of receiving? It's always that receiving piece. When in the past, it's been proven to me that it's just going to be taken away anyhow. It's not, right? And so
it's a hard,
and to all of you listening, please, please, please know that this is something that I work on every day. I'm assuming you probably work on every
day.
And it's absolutely 1,000% possible to live the most abundant life and receive.
Yeah.
1,000% possible.
You don't have to choose between making a living and making a difference. That has been a like drilled down. I felt like the whole school system, you know, for me at least, my education was like, oh, are you going to work for the man and have a stable life, but maybe be unfulfilled? Or are you going to never get paid, but do something meaningful? Like, and those, you feel like those are the only two options, and it's not. And if you can either create something or work for something that you believe in, like, don't be afraid to also get paid for that at the end of the day. I think that we're moving into a new, you know, hopefully time of business where it's not like social entrepreneurship anymore. It's just entrepreneurship. And it's this expectation that there should be good attached to it in some way, shape, or form. And so I think that, you know, for me, I'm all about like being in the business of good. But when it comes to good enough, like that's where that self-worth thing comes into play of when do you call it a day? Or do you just keep moving the goalpost and keep going forward and forward? And, you know, a topic that I have been exploring a lot is like, can satisfaction and ambition live in the same house? Mm-hmm. You know, can I be satisfied with what I've done, but still be a forward thinker? Because I feel like a lot of the anxiety that I carry about the future and my role in it and doing something helps push me forward because I'm like, I'm not settled. But then at the same time, this, why do all this if you're not going to enjoy it and not like feel when you've done something? And so that's what I think about a lot.
Yeah. So I'm going to equate that to like the being and the doing, right? Like I write about that in my book about it's about that balance of being in the moment, being satisfied and doing, creating the ambition, creating all of the goalposts and continuously pushing that goalpost and living in intention. And that's an interesting topic because I think too that I'm gonna kind of just pivot a little bit in this, in that what you are doing is so freaking phenomenal because you're breaking so many family patterns that for whatever reason exploded with Bernie, right? Mm-hmm. Like whatever in the past, whatever he came to and drove him to get to that place. And have all of your family ties in it. I have no idea. I'm not him. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting though, because what you're doing is literally breaking all of that. And you're saying, this isn't how we do this in our family. And I'm going to be that person because as we all know, like hurt people. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're changing everything and making it more of an intentional way of living, an intentional way of monetarily providing for yourself and for ultimately your family, which is so cool. I mean, that's such a hard thing to do and you're doing it.
Thank you. I think that being and doing is really interesting. I'm reading The Power of Now, which has taken me a while to read. But it's like who we are in the now is the only thing that can change the future.
Yep.
And so if I'm not content with myself now and aware of myself now, then I'm doing the future, which is what I care so passionately about, yeah, a disservice. Because one of the things, the core principle about optimism is forward thinking, is like believing in better, is that like caring about the future and where we're heading. But at the same time, you know, when do you change the lens back to where you're standing to get there? Like, that's what maybe my next book or whatever will be about, is because I know that I can look at the future and envision a better one and put everything I can towards it. But I want to make sure that I'm having fun and enjoying myself along the way and not missing it.
Right. Right. Totally. So tell me about your book. I want to know, like, give me your book. Tell me all about your book.
So my book is Chasing the Bright Side. And I know we were talking before that our books will have probably 1 year gap of book birthdays.
Yep.
And so Chasing the Bright Side is about how we can really use optimism to activate our purpose and write our own story. So it's the story of Headbands of Hope. It's also the story of Bernie, which I came out with for the first time in the book, and how we can use optimism, not as a mood and not being happy all the time, but as a strategy for better. And so I hope that people have been enjoying it so far. So I hope that continues.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I just commend you so much in putting all of that in, because I know for myself, having to write this has been like, oh my God.
Yeah. How has the book process been for you? I'm curious.
It's different. Oh, Lord, girl. It is like, I mean, mine was four years in the making by the time that I, you know, four or five. Well, I knew at 17 that I wanted to write this book. So interesting that happened to you at 17.
Yeah.
That's 17, 18 is when I was like, oh, this is totally going to be a book someday. And then here I am. It's a lot of work. And when I say work, it's not just sitting down typing it out. It's about having to take the breaths and say, okay, now I'm going to share this that I've never shared before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, now I'm gonna share this that I've never shared before. And I'm going to have to, you know, and then you get it back from your editor and they're like, can we go a little bit deeper into talking about this? And you're like, oh,
and you're like, oh, really?
You have to?
I wonder if you're going to have the same thing where I felt like I was writing the book, I was like pretty open and just like in the corner of a coffee shop, just like typing away and like divulging all of this. And then it was like 2 weeks before launch, I was like, holy crap. Like, what did I just put in this book? I didn't think about it. Like, I just wrote it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, people are going to read this.
You forget that.
You forget. But I will say the parts of the book that were making me cringe are the parts that people write me about every day. Those are the things that truly help people, not the time that you were on the Today Show or whatever like successful thing that happened to you. It's the times where you're like, do I put this in there? Do I write this? I'm going to do it. Those are the ones that actually help them.
Yeah, I hear you, sister, quite well. I mean, because when I've had to write things and put them out onto blog posts or whatever, and, you know, there's been times where I'm like, press send, and then I will head up into the mountains and I literally go away for like a day and then go, okay,
yeah,
I'll come back after and then read the comments because I don't even want to be attached to it right now. And
I know what you mean.
You know, and then you come back and you're like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. Like it helped a lot of people. That's great.
I think a lot about what I needed to hear when the money was stolen from the manufacturer. Like I was hearing all of the glamour, you know, and none of the grit from people. It was just like, well, one day I had this idea and the next day, you know, I'm in all Macy's locations or something. And I'm like, I can't relate to that. And therefore I couldn't identify with anyone that I felt was successful. And so I'm like, if I can't see myself in any of them, then this is clearly not the track for me. But honestly, it was Sarah Blakely who's like one of my idols.
I was just going to say, oh my God, that's hilarious. Literally, this has been like, just when you were talking about that, I was thinking, Sarah Blakely, like, what about her?
She is so good at that. She's the one who posts the pictures of her in her apartment with the packages, and like her mom drew her patent design, and like, she's so transparent about it that she was the one who gave me hope. And so I feel like that's now my duty, you know, as someone who's been given a platform, to be super transparent about all of it and not the overnight success, because nothing's an overnight success.
Mm-mm, there's nothing. And I thank you 1,000 times over for sharing what you have in this podcast today, because had you not, it would have completely taken an entirely different turn, because it's
totally
so important for us to go back to that place where we know that it's our greatest pain and it's like deception and all the things. But I always say it's a continual process. Like, we always have to revisit it in order to heal from it and also create better good. You can't not.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
You know?
No, and I appreciate you being so transparent too. And I think that's what your book is going to do for people, is it's going to give them permission to own whatever part of their life that they might be scared about.
Yeah,
and that's a cool thing to be able to offer.
So do you mind if I ask you, I'm going to kind of like transition a little bit into this, because for me, my path to releasing the pain has always been forgiveness and being able to step into that space and say, I'm not going to hold on to all of this. I'm going to release it back to you, and then I'm going to take the learning and move forward into my own like freedom, peace, joy, hope, all the things. Did you ever get to that place with your uncle or with Bernie or with anybody else that you needed to, or with the guy?
Yeah.
All of them, right? Like, even the guy that the man that stole from you the money, did you get to that place?
That's a really good question, and no one's asked me that before. I would say that I'm not.
People think about forgiveness.
And
it's so important.
I would say time has brought 60% of that.
Yeah.
But there's still 40% to go. And I think, like, not that my family is struggling or anything, but then there are just certain times where I'm like, I wish that things were easier, you know, for them. And I probably would wish the same thing if they had, you know, still their money that they had, you know, before Bernie. That might be a feeling that I always have. But whenever that happens, whenever I feel that, I'm like, I still get that sting, you know, of that moment. And so I don't think I'm there yet, but I think that I will. But I'd be lying if I said it was in, you know, in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's ever in the rearview mirror. It's not about owning it or saying it didn't happen or forgetting it. It's about, you know, accepting it and moving through it. Right.
But that's a really good, that's something really great that you just brought up, that I think the book helped me a lot with it though, because, and maybe you found this when writing your book, and when you're actually forced to put the pen to paper and have a date with your thoughts, like, you can get a lot of clarity that you didn't realize you needed.
Yeah. I'm sending you my book as soon as it's out.
Oh, yay. Good. Because, I can't wait to read it.
Because I think it will be very, I think it's going to be very interesting and helpful in your own forgiveness journey and process.
I love it.
You know, when we can let go of all of that and really truly accept it, I think that that's when, because we, like, when we live in constriction, when we live in like anger and low vibe emotions and like resentment and pain, we have to release that in order to live in an abundance of, and bring in the joy and the happiness.
Yeah.
And
no, you're right.
They also more money. Like, I mean, right. Like, we, abundance is also for a lot of people, like, we do need to be able to live. And so, able to
there's definitely some growth I can do with that. So I really would love your book whenever it comes out.
Yep. November 10th. I definitely will.
Yay! Good. I think my publisher sent you a copy of Chasing the Bright Side.
So yep. Yep. I have not received it yet, but yes.
Good. I can't wait to hear what you think. Yeah. Maybe you'll pull parts where you're like, Beth, you could really forgive this person.
No, I mean, you know, and I always tell people, it's not, you know, those people that are on this path, and I do want to actually really quick before I forget, my little trauma brain sometimes makes me forget things. That's why I'm like, I drop them in. Have you ever been able to confront him about this?
No. We don't really keep communication, and that, a lot of that is for legal reasons, right. But I do think that there could be, like, maybe not confronting him, but sometimes maybe within the family, like, it's something that at this point was a part of our coping mechanism is humor, of just the ridiculousness of it. But sometimes I think that now that we're all older and, you know, we're not kids anymore, of, there could be more of an honest conversation around it, of what we went through as a family. Mm-hmm. But no, not with him.
Yeah. I was just curious about it because I know in my own, you know, even building this and what I'm doing, I've had to confront a lot of people, not all at once. Well, some of them were at once, but also, you know, throughout, mm-hmm. throughout this journey, I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to take this on. Now I'm, mm-hmm. I mean, optimism is like runs through you, right? Like that's the core of who you are. That's your blood. And so yeah. being able to, you know, continuously smash those barriers and say, okay, this is next. This is next. This is next. Now I'm going to do this. Yeah. I'm going to talk to this person or confront this person or release pain from that has been brought on by this person. It allows you to open up to what's also possible, right?
Yeah.
And so I was just curious about that.
Yeah, no, I think that I writing this book and addressing this and has, I think, definitely made me realize that I still have like work to do there, but it at least opened the book, you know, it brought it into the picture where this is something that I can talk about and figure out where my emotions are and where I need to be, what I need to work on.
Yeah. Well, and how cool that in your healing journey, you're also giving hope and healing to all of these kids. Like this is the mm-hmm. most full circle story of enlightenment. I got to tell you,
yeah.
you know, I mean, yeah. I imagine, so you hand these headbands to kids, and what's going through you at that time?
I think watching them get these headbands is, it completely dissolves any like fear, anxiety, good enough, doing enough, all of it. It's just so, I think clear is just the right word, of like aligned is a better word, of this. Yeah, this is why I'm doing it. And to be able to provide something for them that makes them feel a little bit more like a kid again or more normal or whatever it is, just proof that like the small things can make a big difference for people.
Right. And that's completely from all of what you're doing right now. It's like completely in line with how you are helping these kids to heal in their own way as well. And it's that reminder, that constant reminder of like what really matters. Like in all of these lessons in life, what we're going through right now in COVID-19, like what really freaking matters?
Totally.
Take it all, yeah. take it, drop it all aside. Like at the core of it all, how do we want to live our life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think times like this has really sharpened that perspective of like, I think that hard times, one of the most tweeted quotes of my book is that hard times give us a choice. It's the excuse to do less, or they're the reason to do more. And I feel like that a lot of people have been experiencing that the past few months of like, is this the reason why I don't want to do anything? Or is this why I want to bring something to light? And so we can go either way when we experience something like that.
Yeah. You are a gift, my friend. You're an absolute freaking
same
gift.
Same to you. Absolute thank you for having me on
freaking
here.
Freaking so gift. I got to tell you, it's just like I could go on and on and on with you. Will you come on again?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, I always tell my listeners, like, if there's things that we have not talked about that you want to learn more about, please message me, send me a DM or an email and let me know so that we can, you know, we can have those conversations, at another time, because I cannot wait to see how all of this continues to unfold for you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I can't wait for your book to come out and for the world to read it.
Thank you. It's pretty exciting, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So let me know, can you share with all of my listeners and your listeners, like what are you up to right now? Like I know all the things that you're up to, but share with them, and it will be in the show notes as well. So go ahead and share.
Definitely. So besides living in an Airstream, I have actually working on something that I think will be out by the time this airs, called brightpages.com. And it's a daily journaling service that you can do online. So definitely check that out. And if you're interested in public speaking, you can go to my course, micdropworkshop.com. And that is my way that I want to get more women on stages speaking as well. And you can get the book at chasingthebrightside.com. And I would love to hear from you on social, anywhere you can find me.
Yep. What's your Instagram handle?
@Jess_Ekstrom.
And what about Facebook? A lot of my people are on Facebook.
Yeah. I think it's just facebook.com/JessEkstrom.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So I want to actually, it's so funny that you mentioned about the journal prompt, because I want to end this a little differently than I normally do. And that one thing that you said to me that you started with in this episode was, what is the one thing that you can do today? What can I do today? And so my challenge to all of you, what I'm going to ask all of you listeners is grab your journal, grab your pen, and start there. What can I do today? And remember, it's about this moment, not the past, not like all of the things that we've come from, but literally about just being present in this moment. And what can I do today? And do me a favor. And I want you to then go on to, I've never done this before. I love it. I'm such a spur of the moment creative kind of person. It's my art side coming out. Go in and put in your Facebook stories or in your Instagram stories, tag Jess, tag me, and let us then re-share that in our stories. What is the one thing that you can do today?
I love it. I can't wait to see what you guys come up with.
Yep, absolutely. It's going to be amazing. I'm so thrilled to have you on. You are an incredible light in this world, and I look forward to what's to come.
Me too. Same for you. Glad we could do this. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, hon. Friends, thank you for listening to the Live Boldly podcast. I am grateful to have you here, and I would love to invite you over to sarahshultoncranz.com to grab my free 7 Steps to a Joy-Filled Life. I share these 7 steps from my own heart, soul, and experience. These steps transformed my own life from victim to survivor. Also, please, let's all be a ripple effect of change in today's world. I ask of you to please share this podcast with others that may need to be inspired or who need to hear from others going through where they are right now. To grow this podcast, please leave an iTunes review, go to my Instagram or Facebook page, and let me know what you think. I love hearing from each and one of you. I love sharing your thoughts, messages, and inspiring words. Because we are not alone in this world, friends. Let's keep the ripple moving. It begins with each one of us. I love you, and have a great remainder of your day.